And now I'd like to give the floor to a representative of another important civilization, Professor Chang Weiwei, who is the author of the civilization of state term. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Professor Dugin. It's not easy to discuss philosophy in 5 minutes, but I will try. And I'm very glad that I read the news report, Russian President Mr. Putin mentioned the Chinese model, and he said the China model obviously is better than the American model, which I agree 100%. And so I will perhaps start with discussing the rise of China, more importantly, the Chinese model, its philosophical outlook behind the China model as a way to explain how China has made it. And indeed, there are quite a few features of the Chinese philosophical tradition and outlook. Number one is it's very much concerned with doing, practicing, experimenting. In other words, philosophers ask two types of questions. One is to be. What is the real meaning of life? Or what ought to be, a normative sense, what ought to be the ideal society? Yeah. And China also had this tradition, but China has another tradition which is very strong and stronger than the first two traditions, which is about to do. To do is to be, yeah. Doing itself, experiment itself is normative and itself produce values. As Chairman Mao famously said, you know, if you want to learn swimming, jump into the water, into the pond, and you will learn it. So this is how we conduct our BRI. When Belt and Road Initiative was first put forward by President Xi Jinping, people said it's so vague, no roadmap, no exact criteria for membership, whatever. This is very much Chinese approach. We have not a roadmap, but we have a general orientation, a compass. Yeah, we know this is the right direction. And then in the process, we just do it, we summarize experiences, and gradually a roadmap came out. So this is how China has done along the way over the far past few decades. The other philosophical tradition is it's very much down to earth and people's livelihood oriented. In other words, you have to, whatever economic, social, cultural, other political policies, they should all boil down to deliver tangible things for your people, both material and non-material. So this is also very important. And number three is this holistic approach to everything. We start from overall picture and then into details. As a result, for instance, we always discuss this issue of Dao, which means the overall objective, and Shu, specifics. Dao always governed the Shu. So that's how we can make reforms. China now is the expert in reform. We reform ourselves every year, every month, every day. We call the whole past 4 or 5 decades a year of reform. So we try to improve ourselves. And this holistic approach and this people's livelihood centered means we can plan. It's very much both philosophical tradition and this can-do spirit, and then deliver to the people. For instance, now China is the leader in EV revolution, renewable energies. This EV automobile industry is a result of 4 5-year plans, 20 years. We learned this from the Soviet Union. But we did not adopt this abstract principle. We tried to, what we call the practice is the criteria of truth. So everything has to be verified by facts, by results, whether they can deliver better things for the people. So we started with this, we call strategic planning, not mandatory planning, not you plan a factory, how many shoes you are going to produce, but you produce plan for strategic orientation for EV industry. That's a must. Then each five-year plan, you make readjustments accordingly. Yeah. And then with this kind of approach, I think it will have, you know, positive implications perhaps for the our joint effort to build a multipolar international order. And for instance, I'm thinking of this Eurasian continent and our cooperation, economic integration. There are so many projects. If we have this right orientation and we just do it, you know, in a way, something tangible, more meaningful, and roadmap will come out. Same with this North-South economic corridor. It's the right orientation, we just do it. And in the process, something, roadmap, will come out. And finally, I think, you know, as so many Eurasian countries now call themselves civilizational states or civilizational communities, I think these civilizational states and civilizational communities differ a lot from the United States. United States is known for its deep state. Yeah. Civilizational states are known for their deep peoples and deep cultures, and that's important. So we have, as a Eurasian continent and countries, we have different civilizations, and these civilizations have long coexisted and cross-fertilized. And they all cherish their civilizational roots and cultural heritages, endorse diversity and harmony, reject unipolarity, reject Western self-defined universal values. And these countries, these states, these cultures all have their own traditions for their own way of life, for organizing family and society, for individual collective relationship, for state-societal relationship, and for peace and prosperity. We know how to do it, yeah. I think this kind of deep-rooted philosophical and civilizational roots that are driving the rapid rise of more humane and just multipolar world order to replace this outdated, unjust, unipolar world order. So with this slightly optimistic note, I end my speech. Thank you.